Welcome to our newest Hearts Unite the Globe hug patrons, Annie Olchek. We sincerely appreciate your support. Thank you for joining our community and making a difference through Patreon. Judy Miller, thank you for being our first Buzzsprout supporter for Bereaved But Still Me. Buzzsprout started a new program where you can actually support the podcast of your choice. There are so many ways you can support HUG. All you have to do is visit our website, heartsunitetheglobe.com, to see how you too can help empower, educate, and enrich the lives of individuals in the CHD and bereaved communities. Thank you all for your continued support.
I was seeing a cardiologist that I liked. He was from Connecticut, but he was here in Florida. He wound up leaving, and I later found the cardiologist I see now. He recommended a maternal fetal doctor. I walked into that doctor with Jed, 7 years old. He took one look at me. He read my chart. He said, so are you going to terminate?
Oh my gosh.
And I said, no, why would I be here? He goes, well, you're going to die.
Welcome to Heart with Anna. I am Anna Jaworski and the host of today's program. I'm very excited for today's show to feature a veteran Heart with Anna guest. She is here to share her stories with us about how she's been able to survive almost into her 50s with a single ventricle heart. Today's program is entitled Living with a Bidirectional Glenn Heart. Laura Ryan is an adult CCTGA, or congenitally corrected transposition of the great arteries, and DILV, or double inlet left ventricle, heart warrior. Although Laura is considered a single ventricle heart warrior, she has not had the Fontan. Born in 1970, she has had a Potts shunt, a Waterston shunt, and a bidirectional Glenn shunt. Laura is married to her husband, Jamie, and they are parents of Jed and Liam. Laura homeschooled her children, and they are now both adults. As a 49-year-old complex congenital heart defect survivor, Laura is unique in having survived her surgeries and the birth of her two children. Even though raising children takes an enormous amount of energy, she was able to take care of the children as infants, through their early teens, and even into their adulthood. In this episode of Heart to Heart with Anna, we will talk with Laura about how she has survived with a single ventricle heart, how having children affected her heart, and what the future holds for her. Welcome back to Heart with Anna, Laura.
Thank you, Anna. I'm happy to be here, and thanks for having me.
It's always a delight to talk with you, Laura, and my longtime listeners will remember you. Let's see, you've been a guest host, and how many shows have you been on?
I believe two.
Okay.
I did the one with Kathy Ware, and then one on my own.
Right. Well, it's always great to have you back, and it's been a little while. So let's go ahead and start by talking about your heart defects. When did you first learn that you had a single ventricle heart? And what did that mean to you when you heard that term?
You know, I don't know if I really remember that because I grew up knowing I had a heart condition. And I grew up knowing the different terms, and the terms always changed. You know, as the years changed, the terms changed. So I always knew that I had one ventricle, two chambers instead of four chambers. Or at least that's what I perceived it to be. So I always knew my heart was different. I don't think I ever actually understood that until I was an adult.
Right. Well, that makes sense because it's really complicated.
Yeah, it is. Until I was an adult and really started doing the research on my own, I didn't know what it meant because my parents trusted the doctors. And whatever the doctors said is what they did. Thank God I had good doctors.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Because my mother was good with research on certain things. Like when I started having migraines, the doctors would tell her, oh, it's nothing. It's just the way she gets stomach viruses. Because migraines weren't a big thing when I was 12 years old. Mm-hmm. She researched it. She figured it out. But when it came to my heart, she's like, whatever the doctor says, it's too complicated.
Yeah, it is so complicated. And back then, there wasn't the internet. There wasn't information that was user-friendly for people who were not doctors themselves.
Right. And migraines, they were talking about it in the newspaper, and that's how she knew that that's what was happening to me with the heart. It wasn't in the newspaper every week. So she just left it up to them, and thankfully she listened to them when they said, let her self-limit. Mm-hmm. She did. And I did everything as a kid that my brother and sister did. I
bet you did. Having met you in person, I bet you did. I bet you were just as competitive with them as you would have been if you would have had a fully functional heart.
Oh, yeah. I climbed trees. I bowled. I did gymnastics. Wow. The only thing I was not allowed to do was join the competitive gymnastics team.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I'm amazed they even let you do it, because knowing you, you pushed yourself to the limits anyway, if you weren't competing. So tell me, when you were younger and as you entered adulthood, what was the prognosis for you? What did they say you might need? For example, I was warned years ago that my son might need a heart transplant someday. Were you ever told anything like that?
It was mentioned, but then it hasn't been mentioned in like 20 years. And when I brought it up to my current doctor, he said, yes, it's a possibility. But at this point, if we were to even consider a transplant for you, I would need heart lung.
Oh, wow.
Because my lungs are both, they're connected to my heart, but they're not connected to each other.
I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that.
Well, something like that. Your lungs are like supposed to be attached to each other at one point.
So is he saying that you also have an anomaly with your lungs?
Right, because I don't have a left pulmonary artery.
Oh.
So my left lung is attached to my heart, but it's not attached to the right lung.
Wow.
Or it's attached to the right lung, but it's not attached to my heart separately.
Mm.
Either it's not attached to the heart, or it's not attached to the other lung.
Okay.
So if they did a transplant, they would either have to transplant both lungs and the heart, even though my lungs are fine.
Uh-huh.
Or they would have to leave part of my old heart in and sew it onto the new heart, which only one hospital in the United States right now is doing.
Wow.
This was like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But his answer also was, we don't need to discuss that because you're doing so good. And by time we even need to discuss it, there'll probably be more options.
Right, right. Things could be totally different.
Right.
Texas Heart Institute were offering us a mechanical heart, and he said, no, Dad, I've had enough. Give it to someone who's worthy.
My father promised me a golden dress to twirl in. He held my hand and asked me where I wanted to go.
Whatever strife or conflict that we experienced in our long career together was always healed by humor.
Heart to Heart with Michael. Please join us every Thursday at noon Eastern as we talk with people from around the world who have experienced those most difficult moments.
Tonight Forever by the Baby Blue Sound Collective.
I think what I love so much about this CD is that some of the songs were inspired by the patients.
Many listeners will understand many of the different songs and what they've been inspired by. Our new album will be available on iTunes, Amazon.com, Spotify.
I love the fact that the proceeds from this CD are actually going to help those with congenital heart defects.
Enjoy the music.
Home Tonight Forever.
You are listening to Heart to Heart with Anna. If you have a question or comment that you would like addressed on our show, please send an email to Anna Jaworski at anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. That's anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. Now, back to Heart with Anna.
Okay, in the first segment, Laura, we actually talked quite a bit about your medical history. It's pretty amazing to me that you were born in the 1970s. For those of you who are longtime listeners, you know my son was born in the 1990s. He was born with hypoplastic left heart syndrome, and he has had a Fontan procedure. The Fontan has been around since the 70s, if I'm not mistaken, and it was started in France by Dr. Francis Fontan, but it hasn't always been done here in the United States, and it wasn't really done for children with a hypoplastic left heart syndrome heart until the 1980s after the Norwood procedure was used by Dr. William Norwood. So the Fontan procedure is fairly new. I mean, when you look at the long history of surgery that's been done. Still, it's surprising to me that you've been able to survive with a pot shunt and a Waterston shunt and the bidirectional Glenn and never having the Fontan. So it seems to me that what you were just saying before we went to break about if you were to have a transplant, that you would need a heart lung because there's an anomaly with your lung as well, that probably precluded you from having the Fontan more than anything. Would you agree with that?
Well, it's not necessarily an anomaly with the lung. It's an anomaly with my pulmonary artery.
Okay.
That's the connection to the lung.
Right.
And that my lungs are fine. It's my heart doesn't connect correctly to my lungs because I don't have a left pulmonary artery. And that was cut during one of the surgeries, and I don't know which one.
Oh, wow. So it was cut. So that's not even something they can go back and repair.
Right. It was cut. They don't think it was an accident. They think it was done on purpose, probably during the attempt at the Fontan because of all the scar tissue. It was just too scarred because I also, when I was born, I had pulmonary atresia.
Oh, wow.
As well.
Okay.
But that was taken care of when they got rid of the pulmonary artery.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I'm not a doctor. I'm just a mom. And I'm thinking, wow, I'm trying to visualize what this looks like. And it's very complicated. And so it's amazing that even though you have this problem with your pulmonary artery, even though you only have a bidirectional Glenn, it has served you very well and has not held you back. You were just telling us that you were able to keep up with your brother and sister. You did gymnastics. I mean, I've met you. You look like a tomboy.
Yeah, I've always been a tomboy. I lived in trees. I lived in the mud.
I could just picture you doing that, Laura. I could see you climbing a tree and not having any problem with that. I can see you playing in the streets with your sister and your brother and getting dirty and having your mom call you guys into the house at night. To get your dinner?
And, yeah.
Amazing.
And I was more of a tomboy than my brother. My brother still is a nerd. A video game, comic book nerd.
Okay.
Not me. Me, Got I was you. The one that was doing the sports, playing the games, you know, out in the street playing stickball with the neighborhood kids.
Okay, so then you fall in love, you get married, and did you even ask about getting pregnant, or did you just do it?
The first time, just did it.
That doesn't surprise me at all, Laura. Oh my gosh, did your doctors just about have a heart attack when you walked in and they realized you were pregnant?
Yes. When my cardiologist found out, he was actually going to try to talk me into having an abortion because my mother wanted him to, not because he wanted me to.
Wow.
Even though my mother was against abortion, but in the case of her baby,
she was afraid of losing you.
I wore a shirt that said, "Mary kills her baby in the crib. You send her to jail and call it murder. Alice kills her baby in the womb and you applaud her choice."
Oh, wow. So if that didn't tell him that you didn't want an abortion, I don't know what would.
As soon as I walked in, he started laughing. He goes, "I guess I have to change my tactic here." That is exactly what he said.
Wow.
And he told me that he had a conversation with my mother. And I wasn't happy about that, but I understood where she was coming from.
This was before the HIPAA laws came into effect.
It was.
And I imagine this doctor had known you all your life and had known your mother.
Since I was 2 hours old.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah. So he was part of your family.
Oh, yeah. He's like a second father. I call him once a month.
Oh, wow. That's so sweet.
Yeah.
Is he still your doctor?
No, but I do consult him on things. Mm-hmm. He's retired. He's 89. He turned 89 in May.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first time you just walked in there, you were pregnant. Apparently your mother must have known you were pregnant and you knew you were pregnant before you saw your cardiologist.
Right. Well, I told my father first that I was pregnant. Because I knew my mother would freak out and I knew my father would be more understanding. And then my father broke the news to my mother.
Oh, you didn't even tell her. You just let your dad do it?
Yes.
You were afraid she was going to freak out, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So she called the doctor and said,
"Yeah,
this can't happen." And you went to the doctor and he said, "Okay, I have to change tactics," when you walked in with the shirt that said, "I'm not having an abortion."
Right.
So what happened?
He said, "Okay, I guess we're doing this." I said, "Yes, we are." And he said, "Well, if we're doing this, you're going to have the baby here at Mount Sinai." He goes, "I already spoke to the obstetrician. I want you to see, because I knew you weren't going to go for it."
He already knew you.
He goes, "I knew this is the way it was going to go." He goes, "But I was going to try."
Right. Because he had to tell your mom that he was going to try because she asked him to.
Right.
Okay. So what year was this that you got pregnant, Laura?
93.
1993. And you were what age?
23.
You were 23. Okay.
So I went that day, saw the maternal fetal specialist, and he tried to talk me into having an abortion. And I said, no.
Oh, wow. Yeah. The maternal specialist also tried to talk you into having an abortion?
Yes.
And he had not spoken to your mom?
No.
Okay. So what did you say then?
I said, out of the question.
Okay.
And he said, but you could die. And I said, yeah, I could. I could die when I leave here. I could walk out the door and get hit by a bus. What's your point? And he goes, if you were my wife or my daughter, you wouldn't be having this baby. I said, well, thankfully, I'm not your wife or daughter.
Okay.
And he goes, okay, well, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it my way. I said, fine. What's your way? He goes, at 6 months, you're going to be admitted to the hospital on bed rest.
Ooh.
And you're going to have the baby at 36 weeks by C-section. I said, I agree to your way except for the C-section. He said, why? And I said, because C-section's harder on the heart. And my cardiologist actually agreed with me that a C-section would be too hard on the heart.
Wow.
That we should go for induction.
Okay.
And we should induce at 36 weeks.
Okay. Well, it sounds like they had a plan. Did things go according to plan?
No, because we did it my way.
Tell me your way.
My way was I didn't get admitted to the hospital till 7 months. And he was 37 weeks. And he came naturally. He didn't need to be induced because he was ready.
Wow. And you had a normal delivery?
Normal delivery. I went into labor while I was in the hospital. He came to check. He's like, I'm going to see if we can induce you. And I said, okay. And he checked and he's like, you're in labor. And I was arguing with him. I'm like, no, I'm not. He's like, you're in labor. You're fully effaced and like 5 centimeters dilated. You're in labor. I'm like, no, I'm not. I don't feel it, but I was in labor.
Wow.
And he was born the next morning. He was perfectly healthy. He was a little small because of my heart, which we knew he would be. Mm-hmm. But he went home 3 days later. At that time, it was normal to keep them for 3 days.
Right, right. So do you think that your heart suffered any for carrying him so long and for having the vaginal delivery?
No. And I was actually told after by my cardiologist that if I wanted more, I can do so. Just make sure I'm done before I'm 30. Wow. I could have as many more as I want because it went so well. Just be sure I'm done before I'm 30.
Hi, my name is Jamie Alcroft, and I just published my new book, The Tin Man Diaries. It's an amazing story of my sudden change of heart as I went through a heart and liver transplant. I can think of no better way to read The Tin Man Diaries than to cuddle up in your favorite Hearts Unite the Globe sweatshirt and your favorite hot beverage, of course, in your Hearts Unite the Globe mug, both of which are available at the HUG Podcast Network online store, or visit heartsunitetheglobe.org.
Heart to Heart with Anna is a presentation of Hearts Unite the Globe and is part of the HUG Podcast Network. Hearts Unite the Globe is a nonprofit organization devoted to providing resources to the congenital heart defect community to uplift, empower, and enrich the lives of our community members. If you would like access to free resources pertaining to the CHD community, please visit our website at www.congenitalheartdefects.com for information about CHD, the hospitals that treat children with CHD, summer camps for CHD survivors, and much, much more.
So before the break, Laura, you were telling us how you did it your way in having your first son. And I believe your first son's name was Jed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. And that you could have as many children as you wanted, provided you had them before you were 30 years of age. Is that right?
Yes. But again, I did it my way.
Tell me about Liam.
Liam was wanted and planned, but not exactly planned for the time that he was born, because I had 3 miscarriages in between him and Jed.
Oh, wow. 3 miscarriages. I am so sorry. I did not know that about you, Laura.
Yeah. Yeah. And the last one was twin girls. I was 20 weeks along.
Oh, my goodness. So you had been feeling them kick and...
Yep.
Oh, how devastating.
Yeah. So that was rough. And...
Yeah.
Then I got pregnant with Liam 2 weeks after my 30th birthday. And I was very upset when I found out because I didn't want to go through that again.
Well, of course, to have lost so many babies, that's rough. That's really rough.
Yeah.
But it seems like it was easy for you to get pregnant. You kept getting pregnant really easily.
Yeah, it just all wanted to come early.
Wow.
That was the thing. I just couldn't hold them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're 30 years old. They told you they didn't want you to get pregnant after 30. You got pregnant after 30. You're scared.
Right.
Because you've already had all of these miscarriages. So then did they put you on a strict regimen?
Well, I went to a doctor here in Florida. I was seeing a cardiologist that I liked. He was from Connecticut, but he was here in Florida. He wound up leaving, and I later found the cardiologist I see now.
Mm-hmm.
He recommended a maternal fetal doctor. I walked into that doctor with Jed, 7 years old. He took one look at me. He read my chart. He said, "So are you going to terminate?"
Oh my gosh.
And I said, "No. Why would I be here?" He goes, "Well, you're going to die."
Oh, Laura.
I looked at him. I said, "Thank you." And I walked out. I took Jed and I walked out, and Jed looks at me and goes, "You're going to die?" I said, "I'm not dying." I said, "He doesn't know what he's talking about." I said, "That's why we're leaving." I didn't pay my copay. I wrote the insurance company. I told them not to pay him, and I refused to send them any money. That night when Jamie got home, I said, "I made a decision. I'm having this baby in New York."
Oh, wow.
With my doctor that I had Jed with.
Mm-hmm.
I lived with my mother-in-law for 7 months so that I can have Liam.
Wow. Did she help take care of you?
She did, because she was healthier then.
Well, she was a lot younger, and yeah. She was able to, and I'm sure she was hopefully excited about having another grandchild.
She was, and what we did was we enrolled Jed in school there. That was the only time I didn't homeschool. We enrolled him in school. Jamie stayed here in Florida and worked. And then with Liam, I went into preterm labor at 28 weeks.
Oh my goodness, 28 weeks. You must have been panicked.
I was.
Yeah.
I was in and out of the hospital from 28 weeks until he was born at 34 weeks.
Wow. So he was little.
He was little. He was 4 pounds, 3 ounces. So he wasn't that little.
Yeah, that's pretty good for a preemie.
Yeah. He spent 8 days in the NICU only because he refused to eat.
Mm.
And then we came home to New York on Christmas Eve in the snow and spent Christmas at my mother-in-law's and then came back to Florida on January 1st.
Wow, that's a great way to start the new year. So one question, yeah, I didn't ask you after Jed was born, do either of your sons have a heart defect?
No.
There were no murmurs? There was nothing?
No, Jed had a slight murmur that was innocent and went away.
Wow. So you had two children. Was Liam also a vaginal birth?
Yes. Yes.
But he was really tiny, so that probably wasn't as scary for them as Jed was.
Well, Jed was 4 pounds, 10 and a half ounces, so he was tiny too,
though
he was full term. And now Jed was a good length, whereas Liam was preemie length, even though
he was tiny.
He was tiny, tiny. He was 4 pounds, 3 ounces, but he was barely 16 inches long.
Oh, my goodness. He was really little.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You had your vaginal delivery. You still have just a bidirectional Glenn Heart. Two different doctors were afraid to touch you, although one did go ahead and help you to have your first baby, and then you went back to him to have the second baby. Did you even consider having another one after you had Liam?
No. Because the pregnancy was fine, but his delivery was scary. When I had Jed, they proactively gave me blood to compensate for the loss of blood during the delivery.
Right. That makes sense.
When I had Liam, they said they don't do that anymore. I fought them on it and said I wanted it. They said no. As soon as he was born, I lost so much blood that my blood pressure plummeted and I fainted. I passed out.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
They didn't put me in ICU, but they put me in the surgical step down for 12 hours. So I didn't get to hold him for 12 hours.
Now, did they give you a transfusion after you fainted?
No.
What?
They got me back up with a blood pressure medicine. And once I got back up, and they wanted to wait and see if I replenished the blood on my own.
Which apparently you did.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So did having the two boys, did that worsen your prognosis or?
No, they said my heart after Jed and then even after Liam, it got stronger.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, the way my cardiologist explained it was, it's like exercising 24 hours a day.
Yeah, that's what they say. That's why they say that having a baby is like running a marathon for months.
Right.
You know, your body is preparing for labor, which is just so difficult. And your heart's doing the work of two, which is really amazing. You've got a single ventricle heart. You've got lung issues, and yet your body was able to produce two perfectly healthy infants.
Right.
Without compromising your own health.
Right. And the doctor thinks that was good for me because in my case, I mean, I know a couple of people that have had babies that their heart weakened after. Mm-hmm. But for me, I was used to being active.
Right.
I mean, like I said, all my life, I climbed trees, I bowled, yeah. I did gymnastics. I was active with Jed, more so than I was with Liam. because I was older when I had Liam.
Right.
But with Jed, we went to Disney all the time. We did everything. I always walked. I did a lot of stuff. And I was used to being active, and that keeps your blood flow increases when you're pregnant and your heart's just pumping harder. So in my case, it helped.
And you were able to care for your infants without help? Or did you need a nurse or somebody to come and help you?
From the moment I went home, I was able to care for them.
That's just amazing.
I mean, my husband helped. I had a little bit of help.
So you were able to take care of your babies. You were able to go through 2 pregnancies successfully. And you still survived a number of miscarriages, which is very traumatic on a woman's body. How has this affected your prognosis? Because I know now you're almost 50. What does your cardiologist say about your prognosis now?
He says everything looks good. He thinks I'm going to outlive him.
Oh, my goodness. Does that surprise you?
Yes, but he does. He's like, you're doing great. He goes, I see you setting new standards. You know, he doesn't see any issues.
What I love about this is that I'm sure there are going to be some listeners whose children can have a bidirectional gland who cannot, for whatever reason, have a Fontan, and they're afraid that their quality of life will be jeopardized. But I think your story is going to give them a picture of hope.
Yeah, I think so, because I don't look at my quality of life any differently than my friends. I mean, yeah, I might get tired a little more than they do, but I look at some of my friends that are the same age. And yeah, they get tired too, or run down, or can't do certain things for other reasons. Mm-hmm. Like one of them had a total knee replacement mm-hmm. in both knees. She can't walk a lot either. Mm-hmm. Different reason.
Right.
But we're on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
So I walk a little slower. You want to go to Disney with me? You're just going to walk slow.
Well, I'm really happy to hear some good news about living with the bidirectional gland shunt. You and I both did a cursory glance at the research, and there really wasn't anything that we could find on people decades old with a bidirectional gland. And so I think this is really hopeful information for those who might be having to live with a bidirectional gland knowing they can't have a Fontan.
Yeah, I think it's good.
I want to thank you for coming on the program today.
You're welcome. I enjoyed being here.
That concludes this episode of Heart to Heart with Anna. Thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed this show, please consider becoming a patron. For the cost of a pizza, you could be a member of Hearts Unite the Globe for a whole year and help us to continue making great shows like this one. Remember, my friends, you are not alone.
Thank you again for joining us this week. We hope you have been inspired and empowered to become an advocate for the congenital heart defect community. Heart to Heart with Anna, with your host Anna Jaworski, can be heard every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time.